I've been lucky enough over the last 20 years or so to work in the sports and football industry, and lots of people had reached out to me on email, on Twitter, on WhatsApp, on social, and sort of, I think, asked a variety of the same question, which is, how have you managed to combine your passion with your job? And the truth is, it's actually a very straightforward and very difficult thing to answer. And in the past, I'd given loads of ad hoc sort of just bit part advice on email or a 20-minute coffee with someone, and just try to explain some of the basics or the foundations of the things that I've done, sometimes well, sometimes poorly, sometimes indifferently, things that I've managed to garner from other people and sort of understand the things that they've said and the wisdom that they've provided to me. And as a result of that, it was actually February or March, just as COVID lockdown happened in 2020, I decided to do a week-long YouTube live series speaking about careers, speaking about how to build knowledge, understanding how to get in to build deeper and more fundamental relationships, to think about ideas like routines. I just read a book called by James Clear called Atomic Habits, and that was talking about quite an incremental approach to micro routines and micro habits. And I was also just reflecting on sometimes the stuff that doesn't go as well in truth, and how to pick yourself up when things don't go always according to plan. And there's been plenty of times when things haven't gone to plan. And just try and start setting those things out in the YouTube course in the series. And as a result of that, I actually thought maybe I could just use some of those transcripts and put them into a book. Obviously it took a bit longer than that to get Build the Invisible into more final form. It's taken sort of the best part of 2.5 years. But to be fair, I've just really enjoyed the process, really enjoyed speaking with lots of people in the industry, really loved hearing their stories and their experiences generally, and trying to piece some of their stories together, some of their experiences, and ultimately see how their journeys actually in some ways are very similar, and in some cases are actually pretty disparate, but ultimately have come to the same position, which is their wisdom and their understanding on how they've got to where they've got to in their career. Before I actually wrote the book, I actually wrote a long blog on these type of topics, on like sort of career knowledge and relationship and networking. And as most things happen, my Mrs. Holly always reads through everything, sense checks it, makes it a lot better. And one of the subtitles that she came up with actually was, when we were talking about it, was Build the Invisible, or Start Building the Invisible, or something. And so she, I think one of us said, and it's probably her, so I can't take any credit for it whatsoever, was, oh, that would be a good title for a book. So I'd already started thinking, can I do something and write something in more detail? But that was the basis for it, really. But the basis was because, again, going back to a lot of the questions that people ask is like, how did you get to where you got to in not life, but in terms of career sometimes? And it's all about the invisible journey on so many things. I know build the invisible is a contradiction in terms, to do, because when you build something, ultimately you're trying to build something that people can see. And a lot of the time, one of the analogies I use is like the iceberg effect that Matthew Syed and others use really well in some of their books, which is, you know, you see only a little bit of the iceberg that's on top of the surface. And what you sometimes don't see is all the invisible difficulty and work and hardship and sacrifice and all of that type of stuff, which is below the surface. And the one thing I wanted to try and explore and build the invisible to a degree was to almost demonstrate that you've got to provide that foundational basis. You've got to know your stuff. You've got to put the hours in. And this isn't some like big motivational talk or like to sort of beat the system. This is not necessarily be a part of the system, but this is how you go about achieving, not through just some instant reward that happens or might happen by luck. This is like, you know, a process, quite a boring process-driven approach to building knowledge, so that, you know, you can articulate important things, you can articulate and explain stuff that's going on in your industry of choice, if it's fashion, TV, film, you know, music, whatever else it might be, so that when you come across people industry people, you can have sensible conversations with them, you can impress them, so that when people come to you and say, oh, how did you do that? Again, the truth is, it's the invisible investment that you've made for a long period of time, not just artificial opinions on things that you might not have a good grasp of. The straightforward tips really of the book, I think you can probably narrow down into about four or five different areas, and I've talked about these to a degree, but you know, the fundamentals simply are, is you need to, in a way, whichever industry it is, and it sounds a bit cynical or clinical sometimes, but generally you've got to follow the money in the industry. You know, if it's music, it's like, how does Spotify work, or iTunes work, or Apple Music? You know, if it's about the sports industry, it's, you know, who pays the broadcasting rights? How does that money filter down into the athletes or the talent? Who is sponsoring these individuals? If it's fashion, it's almost like, well, where are you going to source the materials from? Can you work out from a cost perspective how you're going to make margins on things? What I mean is that, you know, on the surface, if you're talking about the sports industry, everyone's thinking about, oh, these are the results and this is the latest transfer speculation, or this is the thing that's happening. But what will usually hold you in much better stead is, again, a fundamental and sort of foundational knowledge of what's underlying the industry. How does the commercial side of any industry work? And so that, I think, coupled with trying to work out and understand how that system works in practice, mixed with starting to build relationships with people in that industry. And if you can, I think, as a specific tip, merge those two particular things together, and that most of the book, to be fair, is about that, then you are on a really good path, because if you know more about the industry, you're more likely to be able to articulate it in a sort of positive, well-informed way. And if you can do that, you know, one of the things that I think happens is, you know, a lot of people will come to me and say, well, how do I prepare for an interview for a particular job? And the truth is that I think that if you can sort of embrace some of these skills or some of the things that other people will say, which are along similar lines, actually what you've been doing for a while is investing for that interview for the day that it comes. It might not come in 1 month or 1 year or 5 years, but if you keep doing this knowledge and relationship side hustle whilst building a really interesting skill set, I think you get to a really good position at some point where you go in for that interview, and instead of you needing the industry because you want to work in sports or fashion or TV or film, actually the industry needs you more so, because you've got the skill set, you've got the knowledge, you've got the underlying confidence that you can do a really important job, rather than you feeling that the industry owes you. In part, I thought I wasn't quite sure I had enough interesting content for myself. But no, the reality was, what I really wanted to do was, you know, there's this great book from Matthew Syed called Rebel Ideas. And I think one of the fundamental parts of the book is explaining how diversity of thought is really important. And diversity of background is really important. So what I thought would be really useful, if not just because you can't mind read everyone and you don't know everyone else's journey and everyone's struggles and everyone else's successes, I sort of tried to make a first go of a list of some of my friends and people that I've worked with in the industry for quite some time. And to be fair, just let them talk about, you know, how they've gone about doing the thing that they have done, from a career, from a relationship, from a developmental perspective. And the conversations went off in so many cool different ways, in truth. And the other thing, to be fair as well, is I didn't just want to interview my mates generally. I wanted to get a real diverse background of people from all around the world, from all different backgrounds, from all different nationalities, to understand their motivations and to understand their backgrounds and upbringing. And so the great thing about it was, is that I interviewed all these people over a 4 or 5 month period on Zoom, and managed to get these fantastic nuggets, either stories, sayings, interesting, Alice in Wonderland moments, where you go down another little channel of thought, which then leads you onto a completely different topic. And by doing that, it just led in so many cool, different, and interesting ways. And the difficult part, in a way, was actually trying to cut all of the great content and actually use some of it for the book, and then use some of it for the podcast, and use some of it for, you know, the transcripts. But the great thing about the website, hopefully, is, you know, you can look at everybody's transcripts, everybody's insights, and really get a fantastic insight into, you know, how successful people have had their challenges, have had their shortcomings, have try to resolve to do things differently, and ultimately succeed in a variety of different ways. Well, it's actually one of my favorite phrases at the moment, because I've done a couple of talks recently to different students, either on MBA courses or students that are at school or even at university. And the thing that I get quite a lot, so it's really looking at it from the inverse perspective or reverse perspective, I get it a lot where people will just say to me, "Daniel, I love football. Please give me some work experience." And the truth is that that's pretty difficult for me to actually do, not only because obviously I'm really busy with all the stuff that I've got going on in work and family and life and doing this book as well as other things, it means I have to say no, probably, because it's just difficult for me to do. I can't have people in the office because there's loads of confidential information. Even if I did, I'd have to go through HR. Even if I did that, you know, I'd have to spend a lot of time with the person, which I really enjoy doing as well, in truth. So what I mean is there's loads and loads and loads of very straightforward roadblocks which stop me or a lot of people being able to do the thing, which would be really nice to be able to do, which is offer lots of people lots of time and lots of help and guidance. In part, this is the reason why the book hopefully would be useful, because that helps in some way. But what I try to explain in terms of how to best get to yes is to actually flip the conversation around, which is part of the, again, one of the bits of the ethos of the book, which is to, instead of when someone is sending an email out or is trying to get in contact with a person, not think about them, but to think about the recipient of the email. What can that person do for the other? And that's, in a way, when I say how best to get to yes, I think what a lot of people need to consider is, what are the needs of the person that is going to receive the communication? If it's an email, if it's an Instagram message, if it's DM, if it's, you know, whatever it is, a letter or otherwise, is to think, what would be useful for that person, so that all that person needs to do is say yes, to type the three letters yes. And the way I think that is achieved is, I talk about it in the book quite a bit, is, well, what's useful for me? Is it useful for me to know what's going on with the latest UEFA report, so you can summarize it in 500 words? Is it useful, for example, to summarize a recent case? Is it useful to explain what's going on in women's football right now with the latest broadcasting deal? All of these things, and I'm starting to see it filter through to me, actually, where people are actually saying, which is great, is like, "I don't want anything from you, Daniel. All I want you to say is yes." And I would ask, "Well, can I write this report, or can I do this?" And it's great, because I think once you flip that idea, that mindset, that mentality, and say, "What can I do for you?" and all the other person has to do yes, you just have to spark the relationship. You just need to start it. You don't need to become best friends inside 5-10 minutes. You just need to be able to begin to show the value that you can provide to the other person. And then in time, like you know, actually, you actually said a really great thing. You can never look beyond the corner, around the corner. You never know what's outside of your line of sight. And that's the thing I love, which is great. Opportunities multiply as they are seized, is a great quote that I use quite a lot. And I really like that saying. Yeah, I'm getting more cryptic as we go along now in terms of stretching opportunity windows. But my basic premise there, again, I think as a general idea, people get too sometimes demoralized if it doesn't happen immediately. That, you know, maybe they've done a course in sports management or in football or in film or what, you know, across all of these great sectors that people have been so enthusiastic about, usually from childhood. Me, it's football and sport, you know, and you've got a skill set, you want to go into that industry, but it's not happening for whatever reason. And I think the thing that everyone needs to disassociate sometimes is, usually it's not you, it's the industry. you never know what part of the time span of the industry it is. It might be that there's no particular jobs at that time. It might be that there's no companies interviewing. It might be that we're in the middle of a recession. It might be that they're not recruiting for a particular reason. It might be that you're just starting out in the industry and they need someone with more experience. And so the reason why I say that is you stretch the opportunity window effectively by depressurizing yourself. And you depressurize yourself by, I think, by saying, well, okay, so you want to be an accountant, or you want to be a lawyer, or you want to be in social media, or you want to be in marketing, or you want to be in PR. Find the best job that gives you the best hard skills. You want to be the best marketeer, go into the pharmaceutical industry. If you want to be the best lawyer, I was doing agricultural work. I was doing work with, I was literally advising on vegetable regulation for like 2 or 3 years. I was doing auto part law work for almost a decade. The point being, not necessarily about vegetables, but more about the skills, is the most important thing is the skill set mixed with sector experience. And by not getting too demoralized too soon, effectively you stretch the window by building your skill set in an associated sector. It doesn't need to be anything to do with sport per se, but you build your skill set in the pharmaceutical industry, in the automotive industry, in the agricultural sector for law. You become the best the best hard skill expert, whilst at the same time you have, as we've talked about, this side hustle, which is you're building your knowledge in this particular sector that you love. And again, what ends up happening is, as your skills develop, as your confidence grows, as you gain all of this experience from a raft of different jobs across different sectors, if sport is for you, or if the media is for you, or if TV is for you, or if, you know, whatever is for you, I think you gain a confidence that your skill set will work for the industry, but it might be 2 or 3 years down the line. And you gain that patience and that confidence in your ability that when that job is posted 2 or 3 years later, and it's, you see you have the perfect skill set for it, and you can talk about your industry that you're being interviewed for. Again, as we talked about, you know, it's less about what you can do for the industry, it's less about what the industry can do for you, about what you can do for the industry, for the value that you can add further down the line. And it just depressurizes you, and I think it takes the it takes that strain away from thinking it needs to happen now to, it's okay if it happens in 5 years, because I'm going to invest in myself in the short term in order to get the long-term results. Yeah. You know, when I started out as a lawyer and you're trying to have conversations with people, I think the thing that I tried to do very hard was have conversations but not really listen that intently. It's almost you're grateful that the person is talking to you, that you're trying to ask questions, you're not trying to ensure that there's like these really awkward silences, that you want to feel like you can get across what you're saying or what you want to say whilst at the same time impressing. And I think once I got beyond the stage of actually realizing that I needed to impress people, which everyone always has to do in slightly different ways. And I read this brilliant book from Dale Carnegie, which is How to Win Friends and Influence People, which I'm not a great fan of the title, but it's a brilliant book in itself. And he talks a lot about how it's really important to be able to work out what the other person wants to say. And not only work out what the other person wants to say, but then really pay attention to what they are saying, if it's reinforcing things that they've said, but also taking note of what is said, because that's what we're really talking about, is to try and get intel, to try and get interesting insights that will aid your understanding of the person, your understanding of what they are doing, so that in future conversations, because again, relationships aren't just short-term transactional things. They are for the long term, to build long-lasting relationships that deliver mutual benefit, I guess. That intel can be used in really positive ways, you know, from a personal perspective, from family, from people's habits, from people's, you know, things that they enjoy doing, so that then over a longer period, you build this much bigger 3D picture of what this person is all about. And then that is when you can positively leverage that relationship and sort of scale it across, you know, tens, hundreds, thousands of people potentially. Yeah, so I was giving this quite a lot of thought again because, you know, I think back to my career and how I started trying to become a sector expert in particular areas of the football industry. And, you know, for a while I was known as the UEFA financial fair play guy because I knew the regulations really well. And I'd go on TV and talk about how, you know, a team was going to be sanctioned or was in breach of the rules or whatever else it might be. And it got me thinking about all of the things then that I became, I think, sort of a mini specialist in, if it was the rules and regulations of football or image rights in particular deals or transfers. So effectively you get known for a variety of different quite specific subject areas, as well as obviously being the football guy or the sports guy. And I think what then is really important for people starting out in the industry is to think about things that are happening in the industry at the time. Because I think otherwise you or people will start unequal races. And an unequal race is one that, for example, I'm 20 years in the football industry now, you know, someone just out of university thinking, okay, well, I'm going to try and get as much knowledge in the next 6 months as Daniel has got over 20 years. It's pretty unlikely it's going to happen in that 6 month to 20 year span. But what happens if a new set of regulations, as they do happen quite regularly, comes out in the football industry, like the new UEFA rules or the new Premier League rules on something? You start an equal race by having the same starting position when something happens. So again, I'll give another example. If it's crypto or NFTs or the metaverse, which is huge at the moment across all different sectors, you know, I think someone could get up to pretty good speed on metaverse related things inside 6 months to a year and understand how that intersects with almost every sector, the different use cases you could have for that sector, and then how you could add value to that sector because of your expertise in that particular subject matter. What I'm saying is it shouldn't be that you're only ever thinking about metaverse stuff or crypto stuff or Web3 stuff or whatever else it might be, but almost let that metaverse be the same as what FFP was to me 20 years ago. Be the person that starts an equal race on something that is very topical at the time, which means if you are a student or someone starting out in the space, the truth is you've got more time. Your opportunity cost is lower because you have less things to do than other people that are more ingrained, that have less time because they're doing different things or doing the things that they have the expertise in. Find the competitive advantage by starting an equal race. Look, I think I try and practice it, if not most days, try and do it every day, because I think giving compliments is really important. But I think ultimately it's thinking about authentic compliments. I think generally people don't give enough positive feedback. But it's really important, I think, a lot of the time to say positive, authentic things that matter. You know, I think saying general things as an excuse for positivity doesn't really work. It needs to be very specific, be very targeted at the thing that the person has done very well. And even if it's, you know, something either in the team that I'd say to Chris or Johnny or Alex or Ollie or Sarah or anybody generally, I think the same applies for when you are speaking to people generally, either as clients, as contacts, as connections, is that when you see something that someone has done really well, the first thing that you should be doing either to their face or on WhatsApp or a quick email or something is just to say, you know what, great job on doing that thing really well. Because the fascinating thing that happens is, I think it's a human nature thing generally, is people feel very embarrassed about their achievements. For whatever reason it might be, and I know that there's loads of psychological reasons, either they're playing it down because maybe they don't think they're good enough, or they're actually, you know, don't know how to deal with the positive affirmation that comes from a compliment. But I think sometimes it's massively underrated just to be able to say, job well done. And even more so when we're talking about Build the Invisible and Build the Invisible Journal, to be able to put something online in a time where we're just surrounded sometimes by this toxicity, I think that's the phrase, the toxicity of social media and everything that comes with it, is to put forward positive messages about something that you've read, you've listened to, that you've consumed, and just say, you know what, this piece was great because of this. Thank you for writing it. Thank you for speaking about it. Thank you for putting it out there. And I think that makes a big difference. Not that I'm turning this into a book club, but you know, Mindset by Dr. Carol Dweck is amazing. I think I've read it about, it sounds embarrassing to say it, well, not that embarrassing. I've probably read it about 4 or 5 times because there's some just brilliant bits in it. And I need to keep reaffirming sort of parts that come across. But what I would say is, after reading the book, so her approach more or less is this idea of a growth versus a fixed mindset. And I don't want to spoil it too much because she talks about it much better than I could do. She talks about it also in her TED Talk, which I'd really recommend for everyone to watch. But in her TED Talk, she talks about this growth mindset perspective of a school, I think in Brooklyn. And the school, when they're marking exam papers, if a child hasn't done well enough, they don't write F for fail, they write NY, which stands for not yet. And the approach and the difference between fail and not yet, I think, is massively significant to the child, massively significant to people's mindsets. Because, you know, when you're learning anything, it won't come easily to lots of people, and things might happen, which mean they don't get it straight away. And a fail feels quite conclusive. Whereas this idea that she says of not yet feels like it's something that's not set in stone, that's developmental, that can be improved on, and that you will get there in the end. It's just not happened for you yet. And that's such a like a hopeful mindset in my mind. And when I explained this to my daughter, Izzy, a few months ago, she said, she explained to me like it was a matter of fact thing, because she explained it in school. They have a saying that's on their whiteboard constantly, which is the terms, the letters FAIL, F-A-I-L, but it stands for first attempt in learning. And I love how you turn the word fail into something very positive, and how that can be used to sort of further a sort of growth mindset. My general idea is, you know, the Build the Invisible book is there to hopefully provide some inspiration and some short-term motivation. But as I've sort of talked about a bit before, I think motivation generally is quite an overrated thing, because I think motivation can wane pretty easily and pretty quickly. You can have that intense burst of motivation, as is human nature. You go to, you know, you buy your gym subscription, you go to the gym 5 times in January, and then you remember you haven't been to the gym and it's September. And that intensity, I think, is overrated. That motivation intensity is overrated. Whereas a slow burn, micro consistency, day in, day out, compounding over a long time, actually is completely underrated. So when I was writing the book and I started journaling myself for the first time, I'd never really done it up until a couple of years ago, to try and track a few of my positive routine habits, I realized and thought that actually, if I can combine the Build the Invisible book, which gives that short-term motivation, but signposts towards this sort of consistency and compounding approach to routine, to a real micro routine, you know, read for 5 minutes a day, 10 minutes a day, write down the things that are interesting for that day. The journal can hopefully be the routine, the boring slow burn. I'm not selling the journal very well, am I? The real crux of the developmental journey, so that you can return to the book, but actually the journal's there for you to be with you every day. When you read something, write it down. How does it connect with something? Write it down to be like, this person would love to read this, or I'm going to send this on WhatsApp. And then you just track it. And then day in, day out, you have the pride of seeing, I've read all of these articles, I've consumed all of this content. I've, you know, read and watched all of these TED Talks from Carol Dweck and lots of others. And I'm really becoming more rounded in collecting all of this wisdom, understanding how the world works a little bit, and then building that knowledge and relationship base. Thanks for listening to another episode of Build the Invisible with me, Daniel G. We hope you've enjoyed today's conversation and took away some valuable insights and lessons. If you'd like to learn more about the strategies and mindset discussed on the show, be sure to check out the book, my book, Build the Invisible, and the accompanying BTI journal, both available at www.buildtheinvisible.com. We also encourage you to leave us a review and subscribe to keep up to date on future episodes. Thanks for listening.